time it was, but I could be fairly certain that I hadn't overslept. If I was needed on the set, there would have been a phone call from my assistant, Bridget. If I had to leave the hotel at 10 a.m., let's say, she would have called at 9:30, again at 9:40. Then finally at 9:50, she would have taken the elevator from her floor up to mine, let herself into my room, propelled me into the shower, and slipped into the kitchen to brew a pot of coffee. None of that having transpired, I knew I had at least a few minutes. Even with the lights off, blinds down, and drapes pulled, an offensive amount of light still filtered into the room. Eyes clenched shut, I placed the palm of my left hand across the bridge of my nose in a weak attempt to block the glare. A moth's wing, or so I thought, fluttered against my right cheek. I opened my eyes, keeping my hand suspended an inch or two in front of my face, so I could finger flick the little beastie across the room. That's when I noticed my pinky. It was trembling, twitching, auto-animated. How long this had been going on, I wasn't exactly sure. But now that I noticed it, I was surprised to discover that I couldn't stop it. Weird. Maybe I slept on it funny. 5 or 6 times in rapid succession, I pumped my left hand into a fist, followed by a vigorous shaking out. Interlocking the fingers of each hand, steeple style, with their opposite number, I lifted them up and over behind my head and pinned them to the pillow. Tap, 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 like a moisture-free Chinese water torture, I could feel a gentle drumming at the back of my skull. If it was trying to get my attention, it had succeeded. I withdrew my left hand from behind my head and held it in front of my face, steadily with fingers splayed like the bespectacled X-ray glasses geek in the old comic book ad. I didn't have to see the underlying skeletal structure. The information I was looking for was right there in the flesh. A thumb, 3 stock still fingers, and out there on the lunatic fringe, my spastic pinky. It occurred to me that this might have something to do with my hangover, or more precisely with alcohol. I'd put away a lot of beers in my time, but had never woken up with the shakes. Maybe this is what they call delirium tremens. But I was pretty sure they would manifest themselves in a little more impressive way. I mean, who gets the DTs in one finger? Whatever this was, it was an alcoholic deterioration. Now I did a little experimentation. I found that if I grabbed my finger with my right hand, it would stop moving. Released, it would keep still for 4 or 5 seconds, and then, like a cheap wind-up toy, it would whir back to life again. What had begun as curiosity was now blossoming into full-fledged worry. The trembling had been going on for a few minutes with no sign of quitting, and my brain, fuzzy as it was, scrambled to come up with an explanation. Had I hit my head? Injured myself in some way? The tape of the previous night's events was grainy at best. There were a lot of blank spots on it. But there were a couple of possibilities, too. Woody Harrelson was in Gainesville with me on this film, and he had been in the bar the night before. Maybe we'd had one of our legendary drunken slap fights. Woody and I were, and remain, close friends. But for some reason, after an indeterminable amount of alcohol consumption, we'd find some excuse to start kicking over chairs and stage elaborate mock brawls. No harm was intended, and the majority of punches were pulled, but Woody is a foot taller and 50 pounds heavier than me, which meant that whenever the game got out of hand, I was always the one that took the most serious ass-kicking. So maybe I'd caught a Harrelson haymaker to the side of the head. But I couldn't recall any such melee. I did recall, however, a moment at the end of the night, when my bodyguard, Dennis, had to prop me up against the doorframe while he fumbled the key into the door of my suite. By the time he turned the knob, my weight had shifted onto the door itself, and as he flung it open, I'd careened into the room, barreling headfirst into the foyer table. But I didn't feel any bumps, so that couldn't have been it. Any pain in my head was from boozing, not bruising. Throughout the course of the morning, the twitching would intensify, as would my search for a cause. Not just for the rest of that day, but for months to follow. The true answer was elusive and, in fact, wouldn't reveal itself for another full year. The trembling was indeed the message, and this is what it was telling me. That morning, November 13th, 1990, my brain was serving notice. It had initiated a divorce from my mind. Efforts to contest or reconcile would be futile. 80% of the process, I would later learn, was already complete. No grounds were given, and the petition was irrevocable. Further, my brain was demanding and incrementally seizing custody of my body, beginning with the baby, the outermost finger of my left hand. 10 years later, knowing what I do now, this mind-body